So the daf for today is Lamed Beis Kiminyan Lev. And the last thing we studied on daf Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis was a machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. And the machlokas revolves around the question of how to rely and when to rely on the chazaka called Shliach Ose Shlichuso. So for example, I sent someone to set up an Eruv on my behalf, can I assume that he would have fulfilled his shlichus and I could rely on that Eruv? And it seems like in the case of Eruv, it's pretty much universally accepted that I can rely on his shlichus. However, Rav Nachman says that's only because Eruv is midivrei sofrim. But if it would have been bidvar Torah, if on a Doraisa level I would have to rely on a shliach, for example, a woman was sent to get through a shliach, and now she wants to get remarried, she would have to know that the shliach fulfilled the shliach. Let's say, for example, she sent a shliach lekabbalah to receive the get. So that's a doraisa halacha. And Rav Nachman says that on a doraisa level, we have to be machbir. We cannot rely on shliach osa shlichuso. Rav Sheshes, on the other hand, whose opinion is quoted here on the top of Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, which is our daf for today, he says, Echad zev yechad zeh chezkas shliach osa shlichus. So we can rely on the chazaka even for a da'oraisa. And we don't have to accept Rav Nachman's opinion, which limits chazaka shliach osa shlichus to a din midivrei sofrim. And by the way, the reason why chachamim are called sofrim is based on a pasuk at the end of Tanakh. In Divrei Yomim, it says, U'mishpachos sofrim Yoshve Yaivitz. And you'll find something also in Sefer Ezra, that Ezra is called Hasofer. And that's because they count the mitzvahs of the Torah, they count the words of the Torah, and they interpret them. Rav Sheshes Omar Rav Sheshes Minan Mile, what's my source, what's my basis to prove, because actually the burden of proof is now in my court, that you can rely on this chazaka even for a doraisa. This nan, we have a mishnah in Menachos. And just by way of introduction, we should say that there's an Isur Chadosh Minatorah, which means that we're not allowed to eat from the new grains of this year that were harvested before the Omer was brought on the 16th of Nisan. And the Mishnah tells us that Mishakarev HaOmer, that once the Omer was brought, Hutar Chadosh Miyat, immediately after the Karban HaOmer was brought in the Beis HaMikdash, all the Tvuah Chadosha becomes permissible and it changes its status to Yashan. However, it makes sense that if you're located close to the Beis HaMikdash, you would know exactly when the Omer was brought, and then you could eat from the Tvuah, from the new grain of this year. But Harachokim, those who are far away from Yerushalayim, they don't know whether the Omer was brought or not. And Mutarim, they're allowed to eat from the Tvuah Chadosha and assume it was Yashan and the Omer was brought, Mechatzosei Yom V'el, from midday. So Rav Sheshes wants to now clarify his proof. He says, V'ha-chadosh do-raisa, who the Yisr Chadosh is do-raisa. The Torah says in Parshas Emor, V'lechem v'kali v'karmel lo sochlu ad etzem ha-yom hazad, ha-yom ha-viyachem es korban ha-elokechem chukason dorsechem b'chol mishmosechem. So that we're dealing with an Yisr do-raisa of Chadosh, u'ketani, and the Mishnah says, ha-rechokim mutar mechatzos ha-yom ve'elech. Now, how do the Rechokim, who are far away from Yerushalayim, know for sure that the Kohanim had brought the Omer? Technically speaking, the Omer could have been brought any time during the day. And who says that it was brought by Chatzos? And the answer is, Lav, should we not conclude, Mishum, Chazaka Shliach Osa Shlichuso. The Kohanim serve as the Shluchim of Klal Yisrael, to be Makir of the Karbonos on behalf of the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. And we're going to rely on the fact that the Kohanim would have fulfilled their Shlichus. And again, as far as the mitzvah is concerned, it could be that the Kohanim could bring the Karbon a little bit later on in the day. Ad Sofayom. but we're assuming that Kohanim would bring and fulfill their shlichus at an earlier time, meaning not wait till the end of the day, but rather to fulfill their shlichus during the morning hours. So by the chatzos, the Rechokim could assume that the Kohanim had fulfilled their shlichus, and the Yisraelim Rechokim could now rely on this chazakah of shliach osa shlichuso, and they could eat from the chadash immediately after chatzos. And the Gemara says, no, there's no proof. Rav Nachman, who holds that in Din Torah, we don't rely on chazak shliach osa shlichuso, hasam, the case of chadash is the exception to the rule, kediktani taima, because if you look at that Mishnah in Menachos, the Mishnah spells out the reason why the Rechokim are allowed to eat from the Chodesh after Chatzos, lefi sheyodim she'ein bezdin mis'atzlim bo. The Kohanim were overseen by a bezdin shel Kohanim, and they would supervise the Kohanim and make sure that no Kohen would step out of line, but rather the Kohanim, as the shluchim of Klal Yisrael, would certainly fulfill their shlichus exactly the way it was meant to be fulfilled. And in the case of Bezdin, even Rav Nachman agrees, and even for a Din Doraisa, we can rely on the chazakah that Bezdin are not misatzlim bo. Bezdin has a special status as the shluchim of Klal Yisrael, and even Rav Nachman would concede that we rely on the shlichus of Bezdin, and even for a Din Torah, we could assume that Bezdin would have implemented their shlichus, fulfilled their responsibility. They would have guaranteed that the Kohanim, under their proviso, would have, under their tutelage, would certainly bring the karbon during the morning hours to guarantee that people outside in the Rechokim, far away, would be able to eat min hachadosh. Now, I just want to add a tosfos, Divrei HaMaschil Rav, which is a long tosfos here on Daf Lamed Beis. And he quotes the Ri, and the Ri has a pretty radical presentation. He assumes that even Rav Sheshes would agree that we don't rely on this chazakah unless the shliach realizes that someone is relying upon him and could perhaps violate an isur if the shliach doesn't fulfill his responsibility. If in a situation where the shliach, despite the fact that he didn't fulfill his shlichus, the mishaleach who sent him would not come to violate an isur. Like, for example, if the baal who sent the shliach to bring a get and deliver it to his wife, he could not be somech, even according to Rav Sheshes, on shliach osa shlichuso, to assume that for sure the get was delivered to his wife, because as far as he's concerned, the mishaleach, what difference does it make whether he, you know, his get was delivered or wasn't delivered. It wouldn't entail any violation on his part if the shliach delayed or did not even fulfill his shlichus, because according to Torah law, at least, he's allowed to marry two women. Now, l'halacha l'maisa, in this tosfos, Divrei HaMaschil Rav Sheshes, he quotes Rabbeinu Tam, who holds that we paskin like Rav Nachman, and we only rely on this chazaka for dinim drabana. However, many Rishonim, some of whom are quoted actually in Tosas, paskin like Rav Sheshes, that even with regard to an Isur Torah, we will rely on a chazaka. And this is based on a principle that we always paskin like Rav Sheshes in Isurim, although in Mabanos, Rav Nachman is the kingpin. But when it comes to Isur V'Heter, we rely on Rav Sheshes, and we paskin like Rav Sheshes. That's the Shita, for example, of Rabbeinu Shimshon, quoted in Tosis, this long Tosis. But Rabbeinu Tam, as we said before, paskins like Rav Nachman, that we only rely on this Chazaka for Dinim Dirabana. Ika Diamri, we have a slightly different version of how Rav Nachman deflected the proof of Rav Sheshes from the Mishnah in Chadosh. Amar Rav Nachman, Mino Aminale, from whence did I derive my conclusion that as far as Doraisa is concerned, we don't rely on Chazaka? Kutani Taima, because the Mishnah in Menachos went out of its way to explicate why it is that the Rechokim are allowed to eat from the Chodesh at midday, Lefisha Yodim, because they know Shein Bez the Misatzlimbo. And it's only because of this special status and supervision of the Bezdin, that's why you're allowed to eat Menach Chodesh. Bezdin hu delo misatzlimbo. But ha-shliach, a regular rank-and-file shliach who's not part of a Bezdin, misatzlimbo. And now Rav Sheshes comes to reject the proof of Rav Nachman in this second version. Amalacha, the reason why the Mishnah had to add that Bezdin are not misatzlim, is because Bezdin ad pal gidiyoma shliach, kuli yoma, when it comes to the first half of the day, the Mishnah wants to tell you that we can rely on Bezdin ad pal gidiyoma. But shliach, in a general case of a shliach, if it hadn't been for Bezdin, then kuli yoma, the responsibility of the shliach extends over the course of the day, and therefore we would have to wait until the end of the day, until we would be allowed to eat Menach Chodesh. And as far as, again, as we said before, the mitzvah of the Torah, the Kohanim are allowed to bring this korban ad sofayom, until the end of the day. The Beis HaMikdash is open for business the entire day. So the Mishnah wants to justify, why do we assume by Chatzos that the Kohanim had already brought the Omer and we could eat Menach Chodesh? That's only because of Bezdin. And Bezdin is going to make sure that the Kohanim will bring the Korban HaOmer during the morning hours. But if we rely on the general rule of Chazaka Shliach Osa Shlichuso, the responsibility of the Shliach is not necessarily to bring the Omer during the morning hours. He can bring it even during the course of the day. Omer Rav Sheshes Mina immediately. Now that we've deflected the first proof of Rav Sheshes from Chadash, Rav Sheshes now addresses a second possible proof. Disanya, we have in a brisa, Ha'isha she'yesholeha. Okay, what does yesholeha mean? She has an obligation, yesholeha. What obligation does this woman have? And we're talking now about what's called a korban yoledes. After a woman gives birth, she has to bring what's called shtei torim, or shnei b'nei yona, two birds. Echad one li'ola v'echad l'chatos. And the law is, she's called mechusar kapara, which means that even if all the days that she needs to wait in order to be metara herself have passed, and she's gone to the mikvah, nevertheless, she's still enjoined from eating kodshim or entering into the Beis HaMikdash until after her karban is brought. O, ziva, or a woman who was a zava, that means she contracted tumas ziva, and during the Yemei Ziva, she saw 3 days consecutively. She too has the status of mechusar kapara, which means that until she brings her karban, she cannot enter into the Beis HaMikdash, she cannot eat kodshim. And the Brisa says, Mivia Mos, she can bring her coins, meaning the amount of money that it would cost to buy these two birds, whether it be Shtei Torim or Shnei B'nei Yonah, V'nosenes B'shofar. In the Beis HaMikdash, they had a, what we would call a kupa, but it's called a shofar because it was shaped in a particular shape, looking like a shofar. It was narrow on one side and wide on the other side. And that shofar was designated and located always in the Azara. And on it was written the word Kinim. And that money that went into the shofar was designated to buy the Shnei Torim or Shnei B'nei Yonah. V'toveles v'ocheles b'kodshim li'erev. So it means on that very day, she puts the money into the shofar and she goes to mikvah. And that very evening, after Shkiyas HaChama, and she's already had the tefillah, she can eat from Kodshim, she can enter into the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, she has the right to assume that no doubt the Kohanim went to the shofar, they acquired the Mos on her behalf, and they brought the Shtei Torim, Shnei B'nei Yonah, and after the Akrova, she's no longer Mechusa Kapara, she can now eat from Kodshim. So Rav Sheshes asked the obvious question, by Taima, how could it be that she's allowed to eat Kodshim immediately at the end of the day when Hatara period terminates, why shouldn't we be choshesh that maybe the Kohanim didn't get around to fulfill their shlichus and bring the karma? Lav mishum de'amini chazok shliach osa shlichuso. She can only eat kodshim if she relies totally on this chazaka. And we're talking now about an isa d'oraisa, because achius kodshim for a mechusa kapara is a chi of chatas. So she must be relying on the chazaka. You see that the chazaka is reliable even on a d'oraisa level. And Rav Nachman is once again going to utilize the same deflection, the same method that he used on the first round when we were talking about the Karban Omer. He's going to use it here with regard to the Karban of Shtei Torim Shnei Bnei Yonah for a Mechuseres Kapara Yoledes or a Zava. Hasam, Rav Nachman says over there, Kidder Rav Shmaya, although it's not written explicitly in the Mishnah or in the Braisa, but Rav Shmaya added this. The Omer of Shmaya, Chazaka Shein Bezdin Shal Kohanim Om to Bisham Ad Sheichu Kol Mo Shebashofar. Not only is the Bezdin in charge of supervising the Kohanim, as we saw already in the previous case of Chadash, that they should bring the Omer during the morning hours, but even more so, the Bezdin Shal Kohanim would supervise and guarantee that the Kohanim would constantly go into the Shofar to see what Mos might be in the Shofar, and to purchase and bring the proper korbanos. So we're not being somech on a regular shliach. Once again, Rav Nachman saying here we're being somech on Bezdin. Rav Sheshes mina mina le. So now that Rav Sheshes has failed to convince Rav Nachman on two rounds, he has no raya from the case of Chadosh, nor from the case of the korban of Mechuseres Kapara. Mina mina this sanya, I'm going to learn it from a brisa with regard to Afroshas, Trumos, Umaisros. Okay, I'm taking a deep breath at this point because this brisa is somewhat complicated. Even though the laws themselves are not complicated, but to keep in mind the Reisha and the Seifa and all the nuances and who's talking to whom and so forth, and the Gemara goes back and forth on this, that's a bit of a challenge, but if it's Hashem, hopefully we'll be okay. Ha'omer l'chavero. Now, if I own fields and the fruit that's growing in the fields is chayav in shrumos u'maisros, then if I send you to the field and I say to you, you know what? Go collect the fruits from the field and you can eat as much as you want. I did not tell you specifically in the ratio of this price, that's the first case we're studying, what volume of, let's say, figs I'm allowing you to take for yourself. I gave you like a carte blanche. Ha'omer l'chavero tse. Tse means go out to the fields. V'laket l'cha te'edem itei nosi. And harvest as many figs as you want from my fig tree. Now, a couple of introductions. First of all, as a general rule, we would have to assume that in this particular case, the Baal HaBayis was not mafrish trumas and maisers. And the reason for that is because maiser has to be 1/10. And unless I have a circumscribed and definite amount of Tevel, from which I have to take 1/10 of Maaser, I'm not going to be Mafrish Maaser. So if I give you this kind of open-ended license to take as many figs as your heart desires, then I, as the Baal HaTe'ena, would not have gone ahead and been Mafrish Maaser. Oh, so now, there's no question that there's a definite Chiyuv Maaser that is chal on the malakit, the one who receives the gift and goes out and collects the te'enim. But here we have to introduce another introduction. In the laws of trumas and maisros, we need that the trumas, that the fruits bring are brought into the house. That's called re'ias pnei abayis. According to Torah law, until the fruits are brought into the house, or any number of different kovim, then it's called aroi. Everything is called temporary. And there's no chiv trumas of maestros. You're allowed to eat achilas aroi. So that as long as the fruits are out in the fields and they haven't been brought into the house, then the malaket, who's out there receiving this gift, he's really technically on a doraisa level. He's achayev in trumas of maestros. But the Rabbanan said that we're only allowing you to eat achilas aroi on a very temporary basis. If you eat an achilas keva, which means you eat a certain very significant volume of the fruits or the grains, that's considered a kvius. That's considered as if you brought it into the house and you're koveh lechiv trumas amaisus. So the Mishnah says, the Brisa says as follows. Ochel mehem aroi, if he's only eating on a temporary basis, you know, he's not eating two slices of pizza, so to speak, then he's allowed to eat that without trumas and maestros, because, as we said before, until there's knisas habayis or an alternative kvius, you're allowed to eat, and there's no chiv trumas and maestros, it's not called tevel. But if, on the other hand, he's going to eat an achilas keva, then uma'asram vadai. There's no doubt, it's absolutely 100% certain that he has to be mafrit shumas and maestros, because the Baal Bayis wouldn't have done so on his behalf, because all the Baal Bayis said to him was tseva lakeit lecha te'eda mitei nasi, and he didn't specify a volume. So he, the Baal Bayis, the Baal Te'eda, would not have been mafrit shumas. Now we get to the seifa of this price. Malelecha kalkola zu te'eda mitei nasi. The balasada, the balate'ena, gives an empty basket over to his friend, and he says to his friend Shimon, "Fill up this basket, and it's yours, up to the top." In such a case, then although ochel mehem aroi, the receiver is allowed to eat on a temporary basis, because as we said before, the te'enim are not chayiv trumas amaisus midoraisa until there's a keva. So he's allowed to eat ba'ofen aroi out there in the fields as much as he wants. But if he's going to eat derech keva, he's going to sit down and eat a meal, is then ma'asrum demai. Now, he has to wonder whether or not the Baal Bayis was mafrish Maser on his behalf, knowing full well the exact amount of Maser that he has to be mafrish, because he told him lekot be kalkola zu, right? Te'enim malei lecha kalkola zu, and since it's a specific volume that's been defined, then he knows how much Maser he would do. Now, what we're going to see here in the sugya, I'm just giving you a preview of coming attractions, is the Baal Bayis is now in a funny bind. On the one hand, he doesn't want to be machshil, chas v'shalom, his recipient in the Iser Tevel. He doesn't want to be responsible for the fact that this person, who might be an Amoritz, he doesn't necessarily have a status as a scholar, he's going to go in and eat the te'edim without being mafrish master. So that motivates him for sure to be mafrish on behalf of the malakit, of the recipient, of Shimon, as we called it. On the other hand, his possibility, Reuven, the owner of the field, of being mafrish master would only be what's called shalom min amukov. The Rabbanan said, you're not allowed to be mafrish unless the tvua is right in front of you, the peros are right there on your table. But long distance afrasha, where you say, I'm going to be mafresh here for tvua that's over there, or peros over there, that's not acceptable. But now you're in a bind. On the one hand, you don't want chas v'shalom, the recipient, to eat tevel, because he thought that it's okay to eat these fruits or whatever. But on the other hand, you don't want to be mafrish shalom in hamukav. So what do? So in this case, the Braisa says, ma'asron d'mai. The chiyuv hafrasha on the part of the malakit is besafik. D'mai means suffik. We don't know whether the Baal Bayis was in fact mafrish or he was not. Says the Brice of Amed Varamurim, this is all Rebbe, Rabbi Yudan Nossi. He says, when do we apply this rule that the Malakid is Chayiv and Afrosha Misafek? He has to go ahead and be Mafrish. He's not sure whether or not the Baal Bayis was Mafrish on his behalf. That's only Bama'aretz. If the owner of the field was an Amaretz, Abel Bechaver, if the owner of the field is reliable, he's a Talmud Chacham, he fulfills the law of the Torah, then Ochel V'enu Tzorch Li'aser, Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says, you can be sure, Mr. Malake, that the Bala Te'ena was certainly Mafrish on your behalf. He's a Chaver, and he will serve as your Shliach, a reliable Shliach to be Mafrish Maser. You don't even have to think about being Mafrish Maser, even though he's eating a Peder Keva. And Rav Shem Gamliel Omer, oh no, I can't accept Rebbe. But Medvar Amurim, when do we say that the Malakid has a Chiyuv Hafrosh B'Torah Sofeg? That's Bama Oretz, if the Balateno is an Ama Oretz. And therefore he might be Mafrish Mi Mokom Achir from a distance, long distance. Amal B'Chaver, if the Balateno is a Chaver, Eino Ochalat Shia Aser. Instead of saying, Rebbe, that the Malakid is not Chayev and Maser at all, because we rely totally on the Bala Sada to be, in this case, he's a Chaver, to have been Mafrish Maser. No, the contrary. There's no way, no how, that the Bala Sada would have been Mafrish Maser, because it's Shalom and Amuka. Lefi Shalom Nechshedu Chaverim Lishov Shalom and Amuka. We would never suspect a Chaver, who's a reliable Talmud Chacham, to be Mafrish long distance. Now, keep in mind that Reb Shimon Gamliel is the father of Rebbe. So it's very interesting here that we have machlokas between a father and a son. Omer Rebbe, not only that, Rebbe has the chutzpah of saying, Nirem Dvarai mi divrei Abba. I think I prefer my logic to my father's logic. And there's a whole discussion here in the Achronim about the mitzvah of Mora Av. How can you contradict your father and say that, no, my father's wrong and my logic is more compelling? But what is my logic, says Rebbe? Mutav sheyechashdu chaverim litcho shalom in amukav lo yachilenu liyama oretz tvolim. In this seesaw between being mafri shalom in amukav, which obviously the chaver is not excited to do, but on the other hand, possibly being machshil liyama oretz in a violation of Yisur Tevel, better that he be Mafrish Shalom and Amukov, and he's going to violate the Isur Drabanan of Hafrosh Shalom and Amukov. But all that is worth it in order to prevent a situation where the Malakid would violate Chas V'Shalom, an Isur Tevel, which is an Isur Misa V'Dei Shamayim, is a very serious biblical Isur. So in this toss-up, says Rebbe, the Talmud Chacham, who's the Baal HaSadr, would certainly and reliably be Mafrish, Trumas, and Maisra, Shalom, and Amuka, violate that Isur for the sake of preventing the Malakid from a more serious violation of possibly eating Tevel. And of course, Rav Shimon Gamliel is going to say, no. You know, it's very nice that the Baal Te'ena feels a sense of responsibility vis-a-vis this Ma'aretz, this Malakit, and he should be concerned about his eating Tevel, but that doesn't mean that therefore he has to violate the Isur of Shalom and Amukah. So now Rav Sheshis is going to indicate how this Braisa will prove his point that Shliach Osa Shlichuso is a Chazak that's reliable even for a Dindo Raisa. Ad kan lo pligi. What's the machlokas between Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel? El demar sov according to Rebbe nechshedu. What we mean is that nechshedu literally means we suspect, but we shouldn't take it literally in this context. What it means is we can assume that the Bala Te'ena, in this case, would, in quotation marks, violate the Isur Shalom in Amukov. Umar Sar Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no way, no how. There's no way that the Baal HaBayis, who's a Chacham, and he's a Chaver, and a Talmud Chah, he would be Lo Nechshedu Litrom Shalom in Amukov. Avo, but let's say there was no Isur of Shalom in Amukov, Kuli Alma, everybody would agree that the Malakid could rely on the Baal HaSadeh, that certainly he would be mafresh as a shliach for the malake, shliach oso chazoka, shliach oso shlichuso. And here again, we're dealing with the din doraisa of Tevel and an Isra Chamur, and yet we can rely on the Chazaka. Again, the only reason Rav Shimon Gamliel didn't rely on the Chazaka is because it would involve a violation of a Drabanan of Shalom and Amukov. But if we would neutralize that element in the equation, then Enochinami, we would rely on the fact that the Balasada was certainly Mafresh, and the Malake could certainly rely on that and eat the Tvua without being Mafresh Trumas of Maisrus. So you see that Chazaka, Shliach, Osa Shlichuso, operates even on a Doraisa level. And our Rav Nachman, the bull is in his court to deflect this Raya Hosam. In that case, the reason why we rely on the Balas Sodeh is Kid Rav Chanina Choza, like the statement of Rav Chanina, he says, Chazaka u al Chaver. Sheino Motzi, Dovar, Sheino Mesuka, Mitachas Yodo. This is a whole new parsha of Shlichus here. This is not classic shlichus, says Rav Nachman. The Torah says lifnei evil osite michshol. The Torah says it's aser for you to cause someone else to violate an avera. You're going to tell him to take the teinim, and you know he's an ama aretz and he might eat them without afrosha. Your responsibility under the law of lifnei evir is to make sure that you are mafresh shuvas and maisres. Otherwise, you're violating an isa doraisa. That has nothing to do with chazaka shliach osa shlichuso, which applies to a rank and file citizen. We don't know. Did he fulfill his shlichus? Did he not? Here, if this man, who's the Bala Teinu, did not actually be mafresh Chuvus and Maestras, he's being machshil, the Malakate, and in Isa Tevel Doraisa, certainly, in order that he, meaning the Bala Teinu, should not violate the Isa of Lifnei Iver, he certainly would go ahead and be mafresh. Again, if not for the Isa of Shalom and Amuka. And therefore, says Rav Nachman, you have no proof, my friend Rav Sheshes, from this brisa of Lako Te'ena Miti Te'nasi. This is the easy part of the sugya. Now we get to a slightly more complicated part of the sugya. The Gemara now wants to analyze the brisa and try to address one variable and clarify it, which we haven't addressed, and that is, in this brisa, which is made up of different parts and different cases, who is the malakit? Who's the recipient? Is he an amoretz? Is he a chaver? Amar Marit says in the brisa, v'med varim amurim. So now we're talking about a case of male lecha kalkola zu, which means we're talking about the second half of the brisa, which is addressing a case where we should assume that the Bala Te'ena would go ahead and be Mafresh Chumas and Maestros, because he knows exactly how many Te'enim the Malakit would fill up in this basket, up to its maximum capacity. So he would go ahead and be Mafresh Chumas and Maestros, and Rebbe says, in order to guarantee that the recipient, the Malakit, would not Chas Shalom violate the Isur Tevel, Rav Shimon Gamliel saying, no, he wouldn't be Mafresh Shalom and Amukah. The Gemara says, the Brisa says, Biyama Oretz, meaning, now we're talking about the Bala Teina. So the Brisa qualifies. If the Bala Teina is an Amo Oretz, then the Malakit has to be very nervous and concerned that maybe the Bala Teina as an Amo Oretz was not Mafrish, and therefore he's in a Dmai situation, a Sofeg. Avol bechaver, if the owner of the field of these figs is a chaver, is ochel, according to Rebbe, the malakit could be absolutely certain that the trumas and maisus were removed, and therefore in tzarch laaser to be Rebbe. Hi, ama oretz dekamale liman. Okay, that's the tricky word in this sugya. The word liman. So we're talking about a case of Dmai, because the Bala Te'ena is an Ama Oretz. Liman. To whom did he allow take this basket and fill it up with Te'ena? To whom did he say that? Liman. Limmi. Who is he talking to? So again, the Bala Te'ena is an Ama Oretz. Whom is he talking to? If he has another buddy, a colleague who's also an Amoritz. And the Gemara says that, the Brisa says that since the Baal HaTein is an Amoritz, we don't know if he was Mafresh. Is therefore Ma'asra and Dmai. The recipient of a lockade has a suffix. Is Mitzayis? And I'll read to you the translation of Mitzayis. V'chi yishma l'dvarenu shetzorach la'asim yisofeg. An Amoritz is not someone that you could talk to and tell them in a suffix situation you must be Mafresh Ma'asra. I don't even know if in a Vade situation I'm not sure I'll be Mafresh. So this whole discussion about mandating or instructing the recipient to be Mafresh Dmai doesn't make sense if the recipient is an Amoritz. Ella, let's therefore assume that the Baal is an Amoritz, the Karmalela Chaver. And he's telling a Chaver, who's a Talmud Chacham, to fill up the Kalkola to Enim. And in such a case, the Chaver doesn't know whether or not the Amoritz, the Baal HaTeino, was Mafresh or not. So therefore, he's in a Suffolk situation and he must go ahead and be Mafresh. And of course, when we tell him to be Mafresh, the Miami Suffolk, he'll listen to us. If that's the case, then Amos Seifa. How do we understand the next part of the Brisa? We want to make it integral. Rebbe says to Rav Shimon Gamliel, Nirali divrei dvarai mi divrei abba. Mutav sheichoshtu chaverim litrom shalom min amukov, val yachilenu liyame oretz tvolin. Which means that the Baal HaSodeh, if he's a chaver, according to Rebbe, would certainly go ahead and be mafresh, and the malake could assume vadai, then he has no headache at all about having been being mafresh from his maises. Why? Because he can rely on the chaver, that the chaver certainly would be mafresh, even though it's shalom and amukov, that's Rebbe's shita. But look at the language of Rebbe. Rebbe says, ve'al yachilo liyame aretz tvolim. The chaver, under no circumstances, would set up a situation where the amaretz would eat tevel. Amaretz, my boy, awesome. Who's talking about amaretz? We just finished saying that the amaretz wouldn't even listen to you if you tell him in the first case, where the Baal HaTeino was an Amoritz, and therefore it's Dmai that Misofik has to be Mafresh. So we concluded that we're definitely talking about a Malakid who's a Chaver. So how could Rebbe say, V'al yachilenu li'amei Oretz tvolim? Amar Ravina. So Ravina says that as far as the first din that Rebbe said, that the chi of maser on the part of the malakid is b'toras t'mai, b'toras sofik b'amo oretz. We're talking about an amo oretz, sha'omar l'cha'o. So the Baal HaTeino is an amo oretz. Because again, according to Rebbe, let's go over this, if the Baal HaTeino is a chacham, he's a chaver, then for sure he was mafresh. So in the reisha that says that the malakid has to be mafresh mitzad sofik, it must be talking about a case where the Baal HaSodeh is an Amoritz, and we don't know whether we can rely on him to be Mafresh. And who's he talking to? Sha'omar lechaver. He's telling the chaver, instructing him to be Mamale Kalkola Shel Te'enim. And now the chaver has no way of knowing whether or not the Amoritz, the Baal HaTe'enim, was Mafresh or not. If he's in a Sofik, he'll will instruct him to be Mafresh, B'toris Dmai, a Sofik. Seifa. Now here Rebbe says, so what's going on over here? So it means that the chaver, let me just read to you the translation, and then we'll, because again, this is that point that I told you was complicated. He says, Ravina, that in the Seifa, where Rebbe says, then we say that if the Amoritz is instructing the Chaver, so the Baal HaTeino is an Amoritz, and the recipient is a Chaver, we can tell the Chaver, we cannot rely on the Baal HaTeino, he's an Amoritz. So therefore, be Mafresh B'tor Sofek. Ah, well, now we get to the Sefer, B'chaver Sha'omer Li'acher. And there Rebbe says, Eino Ma'aser Klal. And the question is, to whom is the Chaver addressing himself? The answer is, Bechaver She'omar Liyama Oretz. Vechaver Acher Shomo. Here's the Knech of Ravina. That the scenario is such that although the Chaver is talking to the Amoretz, because again it says explicitly in the Braisa, V'al yachilenu liyame ha'oretz tvolim. So now we know that the recipient is an Amoretz. So how can we therefore square that off with the Reisha? And we've proven that the Reisha is talking about a case of an Amoretz who's addressing a Chaver, and now all of a sudden he's addressing an Amoretz. There's no integrity here in the Braisa. There's no symmetry between the Reisha and the Sefer. The answer is that Eino Chinami, there's a Chaver on the receiving end. What do you mean if there's a Chaver on the receiving end? How does Rebbe use the terminology Amei Ha'oretz? Al Yachilenu L'Amei Ha'oretz Tevel? The answer is that the Chaver is talking to the Amei Ha'oretz, telling him to fill up this basket with peros, and this Amei Ha'oretz has a buddy, a colleague who's a chaver, and he's listening to this whole discussion. The Amei Ha'oretz now wants to share his figs with this chaver. So again, the discussion here of Malek Halkola Te'enim is between the chaver and the Amei Ha'oretz, but there's another chaver who wants to know, is he allowed to eat from these Te'enim? And Rebbe says, yes, he's allowed to eat from the Te'enim. Why? Because Rebbe Savar, on the top of Daf Lamed Beis Amid Beis, also Chaver. That Chaver over here is the Bala Te'enah, the Chaver, who says to the Amoretz, take and fill up this Kalkol Teis. O Chaver Netzach Liyasa, the Vada Yisuri Miyasa, Ahu Chaver Kamei Iluye. There was no question that the Chaver, the Bala Te'enah, certainly was Mafrish from these Te'enim, so that he shouldn't be Machshil the Amoretz with Achilles Teva. Oh, if that be the case, then even the Chaver is allowed to eat from this Kalkola. Rav Shim Gamliel Omer Lo Yochal Ad Shia Asil Lefish Lo Nechshedu Chaverim Lichom Shalom and Amukov. Rav Shim Gamliel, on the other hand, says that we're not going to assume that the Chaver, the Bala Te'enah, was Mafrish, because that's Shalom and Amukov, he would not violate that. V'yomer Le Rebbe Mutov Sheyichashtu Chaverim Lichom Shalom and Amukov V'yal Yachilenu Amei Aretz Tvon. V'maykav mifligi, Rebbe Sover Nichalei Lechaver De La'avid Hu Yisura Kala V'lo Li'avid Amoretz Yisura Rabba. In this toss-up, the Chaver would prefer to violate an Yisur Kal of Shalom and Amukov, which doesn't have a Lav, it doesn't have an Onesh, in order to avoid being Machshil Chas V'Shalom the Amoretz with a terrible Yisur of Achilles Tevel. Whereas Rav Shim Gamliel Sover Nichalei Lechaver de Le'avid Amoretz Yisura Rabba, Ve'iu Afilu Yisura Klila Lo Le'avid. It's better from the Chaver, the Balatena's perspective, that the Amoretz gets stuck with eating Tevel rather than he should violate the Yisur Kal, relatively lenient Yisur of Shalom and Amukav. And this machlokas really touches on a sugya that we once learned in Shabbos on Daf Dalid, where the Gemara was talking about a case where one person put a dough into the oven, if you recall. And the question is whether someone else should take the dough out of the oven before it bakes. And by doing so, he'll violate an Issur d'Rabban of what's called Radia Sapas for the sake of saving his friend from an Issur d'Oraisa of Molecha Safir. And the Gemara seems to conclude over there that Ein Omer Liadam Chate B'Shvil Sheyizke Chavero. You don't have to sin in order to save someone else from a sin. And that seems to be reflected here in the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. And Rebbe is going to reinterpret that sugya in Shabbos in a different way. And now we're up to the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Beis, Amid Beis. So we have a great challenge here in order to learn this Mishnah in 15 minutes. This Mishnah is talking about what's called an Erev Tchumen. That means a person goes out of the city on Erev Shabbos, and he puts down Mazon Shtei Sudos far away from the city, and he's Koveah his Shvisa before the onset of Shabbos during Bein HaShemashos. So that's going to allow him to go 2,000 Amah in each direction, a radius of 2,000 Amah from the place where he was Kona Shvisa. However, we should know that sometimes a person puts his Erev down in one place, but he wants to be Kona Shvisa in another place, which is fine, as long as he can get access to the Erev, to the Mazon Shtei Seudos. So here's the case of our Mishnah. Nisano Be'ilon. He places his Erev on top of a tree. He lays it down on one of the branches of the tree. If it's Lamala Mi Asara Tfachim, Ein Eruvo Eruv. Now, what we're talking about, again, the Gemara is going to try to clarify this, is that the branch which is above Rishus HaRabim, but it's 10 Tfachim above Rishus HaRabim, has the status of a Rishus HaYochid. The man is standing on the ground, he's in a Rishus HaRabim, and his Eruv was now placed in a Rishus HaYochid because the Ilan, or shall I say the branch of the tree upon which he rested his Eruv was a Rishus HaYochid, was Lemala Me'asor. However, Lemata Me'asor Tvach Me'ruvo Eruv. If on the other hand, the Eruv was placed lower than 10 Tvachim of height, that's part of the Rishus HaRabim itself, then he has access to the Eruv, even though he's standing in Rishus HaRabim. What's the big deal? He just has to grab the Eruv because it's in a Rishus HaRabim, because Rishus HaRabim goes up to 10 Tvachim. The son of Bibar, if he places the Erev down subterranean in a bar, Afilu Amok Mea Ama Eruvo Erev, the Erev is valid. And we're talking about a case where he wants to be Shoves in a field, and the field has the din of a Carmelis, and he puts his Erev down in a bar which is a Rishus HaYochid. So the question is, and this we're going to have to figure out, why is this Erev valid if he's out in a Bikah, and that's where he's going to Shvisa, and this bar is more than 10 Tfachim deep, it's 100 Tfachim deep, 100 Amah deep, actually, and that makes it into Rishus HaYochid. How is he allowed to get access to his Erev if he's in a Bikah, which is called a Carmelis? You're not allowed to carry from a Carmelis into Rishus HaYochid, or from Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelis. So that's going to be a discussion in the Gemara. But we're not ready for that. Yosef, Rab Chia, Bar Abba. So there's a whole list of Chachamim that are sitting here and dealing with this Mishnah. Ve Rav Asi, Ve Rav Bar Nosan, Ve Yosef, Rab Nachman Gabayu, Ve Yasvi, Ve Kamri. And here's what Rav Chia, Rabbi Chia, Rav Asi, Rava, they're all asking about our Mishnah. Hi, Elon, the tree that's described in our Mishnah, that if he puts his Erev above Asar Tvach, the Erev is invalid, but Lamatame Asar, it's valid. Dekai Hecha, where exactly is this Elon standing? What's the status of the ground from which the roots of the tree sprout forth and grow a tree? If the Elon itself is surrounded by Mechitos, and therefore it has the status of Rishus HaYochid, the Ma'ariv himself is standing on the ground, and that's where he wants to be Kona Shvisa, and the ground itself is Rishus HaRabim. So what access could he have, Beheter, to the Mazon Shtei Sudos of his Eruv, Mali Lamala Mali Lamata Me Asara, even if the Eruv is below Asara Tfachim, is Rishus HaYochid Ola, I'm sorry, even if the Eruv is above 10 Tfachim, which we said that the Eruv in that case is valid, how is that possible? the Erev is on a tree, the tree is surrounded by mechitzos, and Rosh Hashanah Yochid is olad l'rakia, so no matter how tall you are and how high, it's still part of the Rosh Hashanah Yochid. He's standing in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and he wants to be konen with Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and he has an Erev in Rosh Hashanah Yochid? That's not accessible to him. There's no way he can eat that Erev on Shabbos. And therefore, how could the Mishnah possibly validate the Erev? So the Chachamim gave the following answer. Ela dekoy b'rshus harab. The Elon itself is not surrounded by mechitzos. It's simply growing in the Rishus harab. And now he's in Rishus harab, standing on the ground. His Erev is in Rishus harabim. And therefore, the Erev is accessible. Dinizkaven lishbos hecha. Where does he want to be konesh visa? Elema dinizkaven lishbos lemala. If he wanted to be Shoves, to be Konish Visa, up on the tree, and the Mishnah says that if he placed his Eruv above Asura, it's not valid. Why not? Hu ve'eruvo b'mokom echad. He is being Konish Visa on the top of the tree, and the Eruv is on the top of the tree. There's no reason or rhyme to explain why he doesn't have access to the Erev. So why did the Mishnah say that if the Erev was placed l'mal me'asara, on a high branch, that the Erev is invalid? Ela, we have no choice, say the Chachamim, b'niskavim lishbos l'mata. He wants to be konesh visa on the ground, which is a rishus harabim. And if he wants to be konesh visa there, the Elon above 10 Tfachim has the status of Rishus HaYochid. How is that so? So the answer that's explained here in Rashi is that the Elon is 4 Tfachim wide, and above 10 tefachim from the Rishus HaRabim, the Elon becomes a Rishus HaYochid. So if I'm not mistaken, I don't see it here, but that's the sugi of Traskal that we once learned in Masechet Shabbos, that if you put a pole in the middle of Rishus HaRabim, but it goes above 10 tefachim, so it's above the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, and it has the width of 4 tefachim, it becomes a Rishus HaYochid. So now we begin to understand why the Mishnah disqualifies the Eruv if it was placed on a branch above 10 Tfachim. Assuming the Elon had the width of 4 Tfachim, then any branch above 10 Tfachim is Rishus HaYochid. And the Elon itself is situated its roots on the ground where he is in a Rishus HaRabim. So he's standing in a Rishus HaRabim. He has no heter access to his Eruv, which is in a Rishus HaYochid. And the Gemara is not happy with this. Why? V'hakam ishtamesh be'ilon. We have a sugi at the end of Masechta Beitza that says, Mirabbanan, you're not allowed to enjoy any benefit from a tree on Shabbos. You can't climb a tree, you can't lean on a tree, you can't place things on a tree to rest them there. We're always afraid that you might pluck something off of the tree. Now here, he put his Eruv down on a tree. And you're telling me that if he placed it on a branch that was lower than Asar Tfachim, his Eruv is Chal, well, I get news for you. He's being Mishtamesh with an Elon. He's using the Elon in two ways. Number one, to hold on to his Eruv, because he rests it there. And number two, to take it away from the Elon. Now again, there's a whole long sugya in the Rishonim and the Achronim. They claim that when he takes away when he removes the Erev in order to eat the Mazon Shtei Sudos, he will lean his body on the Elon in order to balance himself. So how could the Erev be valid above 10 Tfachim when he is violating by taking the Erev out, by lifting it off the Elon, he's violating the Isur Vishtamshus B'Elon? So therefore, the Eruv is not located in a place where he can have access to the Eruv, even though, again, he's in a in a situation where he is in Rishus HaRabim, and the Erev itself is also in Rishus HaRabim, because it's Lamata Me'asara. So Tu Ve'eruvo B'makom Echad, but nevertheless, the Erev is invalid because he doesn't have access, he's not allowed to take the Erev off the branch, because in so doing, he would be leaning on the tree. So Gemara answers, Li'olam Dekoy Rishus HaRabim. He's standing in Rishus HaRabim, and the Elon itself is in a Rishus HaRabim. Veniskavin lishbos lamata, and his kavana was to be shoves down on the ground, and the iser of hishtamshus le'ilon is not going to prevent and invalidate the eruv from being chal, because we're holding like Rebbe, and Rebbe holds the omer called dovish u'mishum shvus lo gosu ben aronu ben hashmoshos. So the eruv has to be chal at one specific moment in time, which is called ben hashmoshos. And according to Rebbe Shita, at that moment in time, there are no gzeros and no shvusim that are actively applicable, and therefore, the iser of being mishtamish mina ilon does not apply at the moment that the Erev is chal, because that's bein hashmoshos. Amaluhu Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman turns to Rav Chiya bar Abba and Rav Asi and Rava, and he says, Yishar, Yishar means you have said well, in interpreting our Mishnah, v'chein omer Shmuel. In fact, this is exactly how I heard it from Shmuel. Omru le v'chachomim respond to Rav Nachman, pasrisu bei kule hai. Did you and Shmuel together work so hard, you medagdei so hard in the Mishnah, and you finally came up with the interpretation that we offered? And if that be the case, then What exactly? Maduahim Omer Kachli Rav Nachman Inu Nami Hochi Kopasri. Why are they so surprised that Shmuel came up with that interpretation? I mean, they came up with that interpretation. Elahochi Omrule. This is what the Chacham said to Rav Nachman. Kav Isu Le Begemara. In other words, did you assume in the Gemara when you wrote up the Gemara? Again, even though Ravina Ravashi were the ones who actually wrote up the Gemara. But nevertheless, it seems that there were other chachamim that were involved. Okay, if we have time, we'll go through that long note. But for the meantime, did you set this up in the Gemara, Rav Nachman, that this is the interpretation of our Mishnah? So basically, they weren't wondering b'tmiah how he came up with this pshat. They also enjoyed this pshat. They just wanted to know, did he integrate it into the Gemara itself? Amalahu in. So Rav Nachman responded, yes. And the Gemara completes this by saying, Itmar Nami, this is how we learned it. Omer Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel, Hocha be'ilon ha'omei b'shus ha'rab maskinon, Gavoa asara v'rochav arba, it's 10 tfachim high, this ilon, and it has a width of 4 tfachim, and it's Rishus ha'yachim. Is niskavi lishbos lemata, and the Ma'arev wants to be shoveis in the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore his Eruv is not an Eruv. Unless it's below 10 Tfachim, because if it's below 10 Tfachim, it's in the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore it's he who ve'eruv ha'bavokam echad. And the author of our Mishnah is Rebbe Hidyoma called over Shum Mishum Shvus, lo gozru bei, beinash, lo gozru le beinash moshos. And now we're up to Amar Rava. Now Rava introduces a new concept, which is called Arba Amos, and it plays a special role in Hilchas Erevin. Amar Rava, Lo Shanu. When did we learn this din in the Mishnah that if he places his Erev on an Elon and it's above 10 Tfachim, if it's above 10 tefachim, is then it's in Rishus HaYochid, and he's in Rishus HaRabim, therefore the Erev is invalid. Ela be'ilona omed chutzli bura shel ir. If the Elon is outside of the Tchum Shabbos, which is 70 and 2/3 Amma in the radius of the city, out of that it's called chutzli bura shel ir. Aval be'ilon ha'omed betochi bura shel ir. Is then a few lamalame asora raise the air of the masa command of al yadomi. anywhere in the city is considered one solid entity. So the entire area is considered makom shvisoso, and therefore even lamala me'asara, the eruv would be valid. So the Gemara says, "Yehachi chutzli bura shalir nami." Now we have to introduce the halach of Rav of Dalet Amos that applies even chutzli bura shalir. The kevin diomar Rava hanosei de ruvo yeshlo arba amos is havile rishus hayochid. Rava says that when a person puts down his Eruv, then he gets a radius of 4 Amos around him that's considered Mukaf Mechitzos, and therefore it has the status of a Rishus HaYochid. And a Rishus HaYochid is Ola Ad L'Rakia. So why did you tell me that if the Eruv was placed above 10 Tvachim, it's invalid? According to Rava, anything outside of Ibur Shel Ir has, even though it's outside of Ibur Shel Ir, it has the status of Arba Amos as a circumference around him, which is considered a Rishus HaYochid. And if that be the case, Rishus HaYochid is Olad L'Rakia, so even if he left his Erev above 10 Amos, above 10 Tvachim, the Erev should be valid. And this leads us to Omar Rav Yitzchak Bered Rav Masharshi, which is here on the bottom of Daf Lamed Beis Amud. So we're here at the end of the Amud, and Amir Tzashem, Belineta tomorrow, we'll finish up on the last two lines and we'll start off Lamed Gimel Amud Al.